Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck. Or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge. Upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Positive America is brought to you by Chili Pad by Sleep Me. John, I love this thing. Mm-hmm. Genuinely, I set up a Chili Pad on our bed, and basically I use it every single night. I use it the same way every night, which is when I get into bed and it's time for that sweet, sweet streaming time. You know, you get to just lock in, phone scrolling, show playing. Mwah. I set the bed really cold. And so then The Chili Pad is like an air conditioner, keeps you really cold. Then time for bed, you send that temperature up. And now I'm set at 84, 85 degrees, sleeping warm, sleeping cozy. You think that's going to be hot? It's not hot.
Ugh.
It's not hot. You think it's hot? You think it's hot. It's not hot.
Poor Ari.
No. Ari's fucking even hotter. Because when you're in bed normally, you're warmer than the room.
Mm-hmm.
And so 84 is actually like keeps you at like a kind of like a nice warm but not too hot temperature in the bed.
I want mine at 32 degrees.
You think so. That's what I thought when I first got this incredible device. And then all of a sudden you wake up at the night, you're like, no, I want it a little bit warmer. I'm surprised. You fall asleep easy when it's cold, but you can also program it to go up in the night. Point is, I genuinely love this thing. Chili, I really do. Chili Pad is not just about cooling. It's precision temperature. Exactly.
There you go.
Control for better sleep and recovery. Set your ideal sleep temperature anywhere from 55 to 115 degrees. That's hot. That's toasty. Get deeper sleep, better recovery, and improved sleep scores. Pro athletes use it, as do I. You can schedule your bed temp to change when you sleep. Yes, you can start at room temp, cool it down when you hit deep sleep, and then gently warm it up as you wake up naturally. Oh, and if you've ever had a passive-aggressive pillow fight over the thermostat, good news, dual zone control. One side cool, one side warm. That's the point.
Can pillow fights be passive-aggressive? It seems pretty aggressive.
Yeah.
No, that's what's a good the passive point. Part?
Yeah, how do you passively hit somebody in the face with a pillow?
What the fuck?
More deep sleep, energy in the morning. It's like coffee, but backward. Okay. Visit www.sleep.me/crooked to get your Chili Pad and save up to $500 with code crooked. They've extended this summer discount for us, but it's only valid for a few more weeks. That's www.sleep.me/crooked, SLEEP.ME/COOKED. Free shipping, free returns, and a 30-night trial so you can test it out. Dream big and wake up better. Sleep cooler, recover faster, perform better. Sleep.me/crooked.
Welcome to Pod Save America. I'm John Favreau.
I'm Dan Pfeiffer.
Right here in studio.
Nothing like the collapse of our public health infrastructure to bring me the office.
So good to have you in Los Angeles.
Great to be here, John.
So we got a lot to talk about today, as usual. Trump's telling Americans he can do whatever he wants as he gets ready to send troops to Chicago. He's telling us again people want a dictator. But it turns out people may not love their cities being occupied by their military, at least according to new polls. So we're going to talk about that. We'll also talk about how Democrats should handle this issue. Speaking of Dems, we'll talk about the party's wildly successful, universally praised summer meeting in Minneapolis. Wow, that's exciting. The possibility for a midterm convention. That's right. And Gavin Newsom's concerns about 2028. Not about him. But let's start with the CDC news. Hope no one was counting on easy access to vaccines or credible medical information anytime soon, because RFK Jr. has decapitated the leadership of the CDC like it was one of his dead whale carcasses. Here's what we know so far. Things are moving fast on this story. Earlier this week, Kennedy announced that the new MAHA FDA chose to limit the authorization of this year's COVID vaccine. You're now only eligible if you're over 65 or have at least one underlying health condition. The CDC vaccine panel, which Kennedy stacked with anti-vax kooks, still has to approve that FDA recommendation, which they're scheduled to consider at their meeting in September. They also plan at that meeting to consider whether to keep authorizing vaccines for diseases like RSV, hepatitis B, and measles. Kennedy, after this, then met with CDC Director Susan Munarez, who was just confirmed by the Republican Senate last month, and asked for her resignation over what he said was insubordination over vaccine policy. She refused. He then said she could only stay if she fired senior CDC officials and agreed to accept whatever recommendations his anti-vax kook panel comes up with. Dr. Munarez again refused. She then called Republican Senator Bill Cassidy, a doctor, who in turn called RFK Jr., and then this enraged Kennedy that she had told Cassidy and he called, and he then demanded that the CDC director resign. She refused again, and then Trump fired her. Four top CDC officials left as well and were literally escorted out of the building by armed security. The officials were the CDC's chief medical officer, the doctor in charge of public health data, the doctor in charge of vaccine safety, and the doctor in charge of vaccine recommendations, who posted quite a resignation letter on Twitter, which reads in part, quote, "I am unable to serve in an environment that treats CDC as a tool to generate policies and materials that do not reflect scientific reality and are designed to hurt rather than to improve the public's health." Cool stuff. RFK Jr. went on Fox and Friends Thursday morning to talk about the shakeup. Take a listen.
What's your reaction to people that are getting a little worried?
The agency is in trouble, and we need to fix it, and we are fixing it, and it may be that some people should not be working there anymore.
Yeah, he sounds like he's fixing it. I've seen doctors and public health experts all over social media struggling to convey just how serious and dangerous all of this has been. I know you've recently interviewed a few of those experts for the pod. What do you think? What are your takes on everything that's happened here?
So, you know, in the recent weeks, as RFK Jr. has been sort of gutting our public health infrastructure, has been undermining vaccine policy, I talked to the healthcare writer Atul Gawande, Caitlin Gentilina, who is a leading epidemiologist and writes a very prominent Substack, and Dr. Michael Osterholm, who runs a vaccine center at the University of Minnesota. And in each one of those conversations, I raise the question with them about what does this mean for the actual safety and efficacy and availability of the vaccines that we care about? And at each point, they all said to me, the reason you can remain confident, even with these kooks around, as alarming as it is, and no one was saying not to be alarmed, but it's that there were still real, serious career scientists staffing the CDC and the FDA.
Oops.
That is no longer the case. Like, RFK Jr. and Donald Trump have gutted our health infrastructure. They've gutted the agency that monitors pandemics abroad. They've gutted the agency that deals with the availability, efficacy, and safety of vaccines. They have gutted the agency that is tracking foodborne illness across the United States. We are so much less safer than we ever possibly could be because of these decisions. And what it really does, and I think this is a really alarming thing here, is there is a real risk of a sort of deadly spiral on vaccines, because the people who don't trust the government now run the government and are undermining vaccine policies from there. So then the people who do trust the government have very real questions about, can we trust this group of kooks to ensure that we're getting safe vaccines? And you can see just a complete undermining of the vaccine system that has kept us safe for generations in this country because of the work, because Trump picked and the Republican Senate confirmed a anti-vaccine conspiracy theorist to be in charge of our vaccine supply. It's incredibly, incredibly dangerous.
Quote, "I think this is quite a negative and potentially catastrophic step for the country." That's Admiral Brett Giroir, who's a physician who helped lead the response to the coronavirus pandemic during Trump's first term.
We remember him from the briefings.
And he advised Kennedy during the latest transition. So this is not some liberal kook. And Jerome Adams, who was the Surgeon General for the first term, he's been criticizing this. I mean, it is not like, you know, a group of liberals and Democrats on Twitter. This is, people are very, very alarmed. Like you said, what happens if there's an Ebola outbreak right now? What happens, like, bioweapons, the next pandemic? Like, we just forget about whether they're kooks or not. None of them have the experience. And these were some of the best, most trusted officials who had served both Republican and Democratic administrations, including some in Trump's administration, over the last couple decades. And now the CDC doesn't have that expertise anymore.
It's not just that they question the science. It's they explicitly reject the science because it's science. Because if you were to actually listen to the science, to actually take a moment to listen to the people who know what they're talking about, to look at the research, it just eviscerates their entire position on vaccines. And so now we have our public health infrastructure is run by anti-scientists.
Yeah. And just so people understand what limiting the authorization for a vaccine like COVID-19 actually means. So they say, okay, you can get it if you're over 65. It's authorized for people over 65 and for people with one comorbidity, one underlying health condition. So, of course, it has not been approved yet by this CDC panel as well. FDA already did this. The kooks over there now. And now we're waiting for the CDC kooks in September to approve this too. If it is approved, that means if you or I wanted to get the COVID vaccine, we could try to ask our doctor. But a lot of doctors know that if they prescribe something that is off market, which this would be if it's not authorized for people like us, then they could be open to litigation, to lawsuits, to malpractice suits. And so, you know, some doctors will probably say, sure, I'll still do it anyway because these people are fucking crazy. But others won't. And another thing, a lot of people, most people get these vaccines at Walmart, CVS, places like that. They're not going to administer them to people who aren't over 65 or have one underlying health condition. So you're really going to have a lot of people who just don't get this vaccine. And this is the COVID-19 vaccine. The fact that they're going to look at and reconsider measles, hepatitis, I mean, it's like really fucking scary.
At least measles hasn't been in the news recently.
I mean, did you see the guy that was in charge of vaccine recommendations? I read some of his resignation letter. He also said in that letter, it's clear that he's never once, the senior leadership, he and his team have never once had the opportunity to brief Kennedy. And it's clear that Kennedy's only listening to outside groups.
Yeah, like this is my point. Like Kennedy's position is absurd. The scientific consensus around vaccines is so strong that it is impossible. It is like he is like an anti-gravity or earth or flat earth person. Like you can't have a conversation about it because you can't withstand 1 minute of scrutiny. So instead of testing, because like being an actual public service official and actually abiding by what he said he would do in his confirmation, what Kennedy is doing, he's avoiding having the conversation so he doesn't have to test. He doesn't have to try to defend his position to people who actually know the answers because he will fail in a second.
And again, this is like, you know, going back to the pandemic. This isn't about like vaccine mandates and you're forced to get this or that. This is just about the availability of vaccines that have been tested, that have saved millions of lives, and people just saying, I think I want to choose that. It's safe. It's going to protect me, and I'd like to choose it. And basically, Kennedy and HHS and CDC and the government right now are going to say, no, you can't. You can't unless you can find it off market somewhere.
Yeah, they know better than your doctor.
Kennedy tried to fire Menarez. He couldn't. Trump had to do it. So Trump, the White House said today that Trump hasn't commented on this yet, at least as of this recording. We're Thursday afternoon. But Caroline Leavitt at the briefing said that Trump fired her. And this guy, Jim O'Neill, who was a Kennedy advisor, is now going to be the head of the CDC temporarily until they can find a permanent replacement. This guy was a Peter Thiel advisor.
Cool.
And here's what he thinks of vaccines. In January of 22, he tweeted, is Omicron the best vaccine? Remember, CDC can redefine the word vaccine at will. So his suggestion was, if you get Omicron, that's the best kind of vaccine.
It's going to be really interesting to know whether they actually put up another person for this job.
Yeah.
I suspect they're not. I suspect they're just going to run through whatever it is, 180 days of acting appointments until the midterms or until forever.
So unfortunately, Kennedy was also asked about the horrific mass shooting at a church in Minneapolis this week, which took the lives of two children. I say unfortunately because it gave him a chance to say this.
We're launching studies on the potential contribution of some of the SSRI drugs and some of the other psychiatric drugs that might be contributing to violence.
So this is the new line. J.D. Vance also echoed that in a speech later on Thursday. This is the idea that SSRIs treat people for depression, for anxiety. And the idea here is kids are taking these, young people are taking these, and it's contributing to mental illness, even though they're prescribed to help mental illness. It's contributing to mental illness, and that's causing mass shootings.
I would just note that in the United States of America, it is much easier to buy an assault rifle than it is to get access to antidepressants.
I mean, it's like this is what they do, though, because there's this whole debate around SSRIs, right? And, you know, they have some downsides, some side effects, especially for people under 25, which is why the FDA has like a warning on them. And doctors tend to monitor people, especially young people who are on them, closely for the first couple weeks to make sure everything's okay. After that, the record is excellent. It has helped millions and millions of people who are on these drugs. There is zero evidence that it contributes to mental illness or violence at all. There are some, you know, there are some side effects. People get off them too quickly. You have to watch that. So, you know, do it with a doctor. But the idea now that we are going to blame mass shootings on antidepressants, it's just like, and this is just one response to the horrific shooting in Minneapolis by the Republicans. They have turned this whole thing into a culture war. The shooter, 23 years old, took their own life. It appears that the shooter was trans. So they're, of course, blaming the fact that the shooter was trans on this, on the shooting. It's said that the shooter in one video had, like, killed Donald Trump on the guns. And so they're saying, oh, it was like an anti-Trump trans person that did it. That the shooter also had anti-Semitic, racist, anti-Latino, all kinds of other slurs written on the weapons. The shooter worshipped other mass shooters, like the Christchurch right-wing shooter and other, like, extreme right-wing shooters, Timothy McVeigh, all this other stuff. So clearly the person is just disturbed in a whole bunch of different ways that don't fit into a fucking political box either way, which is typically the case, which is why you don't make every shooting about politics. And this is all they can talk about now.
I mean, I've been in your office all day today, which means I've been watching more Fox News than I've watched in months. Yeah. And the chyron all day is trans shooter when talking about this.
Yeah, and trans violence. This is their new thing, that all the mass shooters are trans now, which is just fucking horseshit.
The dialogue on this, frankly, the entire dialogue on it is so depressingly tedious, particularly after school shootings, where it's just like it's so detached from the reality. And it's like what the right is doing, and I'm going to get to that in a second, is absolutely gross and horrendous. But the whole conversation always is like, happens is that everyone runs and tries to find out, is this person a Republican or a Democrat? Are they pro-Trump or anti-Trump? And then we're going to make our whole case on that. And I think that is so detached from that's like a really a problem of the political class. It's very detached from, I think, how real people feel about this. Like, I think about this all the time, but just my daughter's elementary school is less than a mile from my house. So every time I'm home during the school day and I hear a siren, my immediate instinct is that the worst thing might be happening, right?
Yeah.
And I think that's how every parent feels. So you for think sure. of that every time you drop your kid off at school, where no matter where you live, big city, small town, it can happen anywhere. And I think the response, everyone's response, the failure to be able to do anything about this, even though this is obviously the Republicans' fault that we have not been able to deal with guns in this country, is one reason why people are so detached and depressed about politics, because it's like, here is this thing that's happening that I worry about every single day that is only happens here in the United States and we can't do anything of consequence about it. It's very frustrating. On the right, like what is happening here is the way they respond to these shootings, whether it is turning to a culture war, making about trans, making about SSRIs or whatever it is, betrays the weakness of their position. That like they're trying so hard to gaslight away from the most obvious fucking fact in the world, which is it is too easy to get guns in this country. It's that simple, because that's why it happens here. It doesn't happen in all the other countries. Like we are not a country that has. We don't have more mental illness than the rest of the world. We don't have...
Other countries have trans people. Yes. Other countries have mental illness. Other countries have all the other shit.
The difference here is that you can walk into a store and you can walk out with a gun that same day.
And it's like, you know what, you fucking cowards? Just say, we want people to have guns. And that's it. And we know that everyone having guns means there's going to be a bunch of mass shootings. People are going to die. But more important for our people to have guns to, you know, I guess defend themselves, to keep themselves armed in case there's government overreach.
Oops.
Yeah, wouldn't want that, right? And that's it. But instead, they have to make up all these other fucking excuses and targets for people, which is just, it's disgusting.
The logical consequence of the Republican position here is that their strict reading of the Second Amendment means that they are willing to live with tragedies like this. That is a price they believe is worth paying for treating the Second Amendment the way they treat it. Not the way it's been treated for the most of the history of the United States, but the way it has been treated by Republicans in this moment, by this Supreme Court over the last 15 years.
And they will not own up to it, right?
No. Just
and
admit
the,
it.
The other thing is that this debate has moved very quickly from, you know, a year ago during the campaign when it was, let's talk about the participation of trans people in sports, especially young children. It's moved from that to now, I mean, and there was always this contingent on the right, but now it's like the Republican Party position, basically, which is being trans is just a mental illness and that it's not real. Not even like it's moved so, it's not even like, should we have gender affirming care? Which age? This guy? No. And now it's just like kids who are allowed to be trans, the parents are doing them a disservice, the schools are doing them a disservice, and now they're going to get mental illness and now they're going to kill people. This is what they're saying. It's just, by the way, that is not where the polling is. Like, we've talked a lot about this is another thing where, you know, we've talked about immigration after the election, where the polling was and where it is now. On every one of these issues, these culture issues, that, you know, the consensus after the election is that, you know, Donald Trump, you know, part of the reason he won was because of this. He has now gone so far to the other extreme, and everyone in his party has, that he is not in line with the polling on most of the shit. Right? You can have debates about trans participation in sports and you can look at the polling and be like, oh, we got some work to do. But the idea that like trans people shouldn't exist, that's not a majority position by any fucking stretch of the imagination.
And the way the Republicans have handled this and the way they've handled trans issues since Trump's been elected is the argument for why Democrats cannot back off on defending the rights, dignity, and humanity of trans people.
Yes.
Like, we can debate sports participation, you can debate the other issues, but you cannot back away on this because you have the President of the United States, you have members of one of our political parties demagoguing some of the most vulnerable people in our society and treating them as less than human. And it is our responsibility, it's our moral imperative to stand up for them. And I think that this is beyond politics, but as you point out, doing that, treating humans as humans, to let people live their lives, is good politics.
And again, like in a normal world, like you said, everyone who has children, people who don't have children would just be saying, okay, two children were murdered praying in church and a whole bunch of others were injured. And what can we do as a society about how to make sure that doesn't happen? That's it, without doing all of this bullshit. You know, and one way is maybe we can limit the availability of guns. People still having the right to have guns, but maybe we can do something to limit the availability of guns or to make sure we do background checks or to make sure they don't get in the hands of people who are mentally ill or make sure they don't get into the hands of people who've already committed crimes. Maybe. So, unbelievably, all these statements from RFK aren't even his most upsetting of the week. We're back to RFK. This didn't get a ton of attention for some reason, but at a cabinet meeting on Tuesday, Kennedy gave the following update to Trump.
We're finding certain interventions now that are clearly, almost certainly causing autism. And we're going to be able to address those in September.
So again, he's referencing September. That's the meeting where they're going to reconsider some of the authorizations on these other vaccines. Kennedy has previously said for a long time that he thinks there's a link between vaccines and autism. There is no link. No science, no evidence has ever shown any kind of link there. Trump has also flirted with this idea as far back
many times,
2014, I think. Bill Cassidy, the Republican senator who's, again, supposed to be a doctor and was, you know, very concerned about RFK's nomination, but then, you know, voted yes anyway because he just wanted to give him a chance. He has now called for the CDC vaccine panel meeting to be postponed because of, quote, serious allegations that have been made about the meeting agenda, membership, and lack of scientific process. And he said that if it goes forward, quote, any recommendations made should be rejected as lacking legitimacy. Would have been nice if he had weighed in on the lunatics on the panel and Kennedy by just voting no on his nomination, but here we are. What, if anything, do you think Democrats in Congress and maybe Bill Cassidy can do here?
I think to make this work, you would need to build a bipartisan coalition of senators, potentially members of Congress as well, who want to fix the situation at the CDC or improve the situation and hold RFK Jr. accountable. And so you could do this in a couple of ways. You could, like, they control the power of the purse, like in whatever government funding bill we're going to discuss, there could be some specific funding restrictions or guidelines around how they can spend their money. You could demand in exchange for funds more transparency, regular briefings and hearings. You could, in negotiations, if you had a majority there or if you had a true bipartisan coalition, you could try to force new members on, right, on the committee or a revamping of the committee to get more legitimate scientists on there. But it really, like the question you asked, what can Democrats do? Democrats can do very little because we have no power. And we're not in a world where there is a specific HHS appropriations bill moving through Congress because the appropriations process is broken. So this would have to be something that took place in the larger government funding discussion.
And so you could like shut down the government over this.
Yeah, or you could, or if a deal
one of
was,
many things,
but. Or if a deal was being done, you could write it into the deal. But it's just easier when you have a specific bill for a specific agency where you have more leverage, the power of the purse is more important than when, or is more powerful, you have more leverage in them than if you're doing the whole thing. But you really need Republicans here to go along. And maybe Cassidy will do it. Maybe there are some others who will, but you need more than just Cassidy and maybe like Collins, Murkowski. And I don't know how Mitch McConnell is feeling about vaccines today.
Yeah. I mean, I guess what Democrats can do then is make it a big enough issue and keep the drumbeat going so that when we get to the government funding fight, this is one of the things that becomes a sticking point in the funding. I mean, you know, we'll talk about this, I'm sure, in the coming weeks as we get closer to the funding fight. But we are now piling up a bunch of very big problems, crises in this government that are making it, I think, easier for Democrats to say, look, we're going to fund this kind of fucking health agency. We're going to fund this ICE agency, we're going to fund these fucking this tariff policy. Like we're getting close to that. I think
it's hard to overstate how far out of the mainstream RFK Jr. and Trump are on vaccines.
Yeah,
like extremely,
and just public health in general at this point. Right. Because it's definitely vaccines, but it's also, I mean, pandemic preparedness, Ebola, all the stuff that we talked about.
The polling on the coronavirus vaccine is very polarized on partisanship.
Yeah,
but on all the other vaccines, we are at like 90% trust. Either so, like they are in the far, far, far minority here. And so I think whether it's through the government funding fight, whether it's through yelling and screaming about this, like actually drawing attention to this is important because you want this to feel so messy for Trump, who I think is like, kind of, he is vaccine skeptic, antagonist, like agnostic, yeah, sort of. Like he sort of tried when RFK Jr. came aboard to like push back on the idea of this. Like you want to make this really messy for the Republicans in the Senate, the House, and the Trump White House.
Yeah, it was maybe the most successful initiative of his first term.
Yeah, I mean, he's
Operation Warp Speed.
He's a vaxxer. He was getting boosted all the time.
He's
over 65. He'll probably get his COVID booster.
We say a lot that this, like, you know, Dems should talk about this and make noise about this, you know, name your issue. But I do think on this one, this is people's health, getting their kids vaccinated, making sure that their family has good medical care, can follow good and trust credible medical information coming from the government. That's important to people. That is one that I think resonates with people and that they're going to experience in their daily lives.
I mean, every parent at the beginning of the school year is certifying their kids' vaccines.
Yeah.
Right? Like it's something that is very much in your life on a very frequent basis.
Pod Save America is brought to you by Blinds.com. Blinds.com brings your space to life your way. From expert guidance to custom styles made to fit your project, they make transforming your space feel just as good as it looks because the only thing they treat better than windows is you. Blinds.com called out the window treatment industry for what it was: outdated, overpriced,
and woke.
Go woke, go broke, window treatment industry. Built to serve salespeople, not customers. So they flipped it. While others may overpromise or overcharge, Blinds.com delivers custom window treatments for your space, your way, at your convenience. And unlike some competitors, the price you see is the price you pay. No hidden fees, and there's zero pressure. Whether you want to DIY it, let the pros handle it, or maybe something in between, Blinds.com gives you options so you're in control. Need help picking the right look? Blinds.com's design experts are available on your schedule with free consultations. And it's all backed by Blinds.com's 100% satisfaction guarantee, so you know you're covered. Give your home a fresh look for less during Blinds.com's Labor Day mega sale. Save up to 50% site-wide and get a professional measure at no cost. Hurry, sale ends September 3rd. Rules and restrictions apply. See Blinds.com for details. So we've all become used to the ritualistic Trump fluffing at cabinet meetings now. Must have been some real tendonitis after the one.
I don't want to get explicit, but where's the tendonitis?
Where do you think it is, Dan?
That's a good answer.
3.5 hours. 3.5 hours of Trump fluffing in the last cabinet meeting this week. We have an excellent compilation that our producers put together. Let's listen.
Mr. President, I invite you to see your big, beautiful face on a banner in front of the Department of Labor, because you are really the transformational president of the American worker, along with the American flag and President Roosevelt.
And there's only one thing I wish for, that that noble committee finally gets its act together and realizes that you are the single finest candidate since the Nobel Peace, this Nobel Award was ever talked about.
And you, sir, are restoring trust to government.
I do believe we're in a revolution. 1776 was the first one. 1863 or so with Abraham Lincoln was the second. This is the third with Donald Trump leading the way. And we are saving America.
How do these people, like, how do they keep a straight face?
I mean,
they don't believe that.
I assume not, but I'm not so sure anymore. I think people can convince themselves of some really crazy shit.
I want to believe that before the cabinet meeting, before he walks in, they're all doing like a bit with each other, and they're like having a fun competition. Like, okay, who can be the most embarrassing?
I don't.
We know that Marco Rubio's got jokes, right? That's what we've heard on the Katie Miller podcast. So maybe Marco Rubio is sort of organizing, and maybe it's like a pool.
I don't think so. I think that they were too afraid of getting caught doing that and then being kicked out of the club.
3.5 hours, Dan. 3.5 hours. Like Fox cut away. Because we were watching it. And I had been in a meeting and I came back and I was looking on Twitter and I still see Aaron Rupar and ACYN sending clips around from the cabinet meeting. I'm like, it's been 3 hours. What is happening?
Yeah, it's...
No substance. No substance at the meeting. Just total fluffing.
Like, I love my parents, but I don't think I could in public talk about them in the same way. Like,
this is how our cabinet meetings went, right?
Yes, it's very similar. Barack Obama would lose his mind if anyone was ever that obsequious in his presence.
And I know everyone's like, oh, you know, about everyone loved Obama, blah, blah, it was a cult. But like, he got extremely uncomfortable in cabinet meetings when it seemed like people were just
in
like,
any meeting,
But yeah. Also, you know, in the cabinet meetings, the pool comes in, right? And so in the pool, then you have like a sort of a fake cabinet meeting while the press is there and everyone gives like little reports. Actually, we had like one person give each new meeting, there would be like a different cabinet member giving a quick report. Yeah. And then Obama would say something and then the
press would leave.
And there'd be a real agenda.
Usually the press would just be there for Obama's opening remarks.
Yeah, that's right.
And then they would leave. And then, so here's the thing. You do a fake meeting for the press, then you do a real meeting. They never did the real meeting in this case. They just did the fake meeting for 3.5 hours.
Yeah. Even the real meeting is not like, I mean.
It's kind of fake.
It's kind of fake, yeah. Right? But, and we say that we were on the outside of the cabinet.
We were definitely on the outside.
There's the people around the table and there's chairs all around.
And you had to give up your phone and that was fucking brutal.
Yes, because it's like, I wasn't talking, yeah, that's
like,
for sure.
It's like, can
but
we
I would
speed
just
through
there.
The SBA presentation here? It's going.
Anyways, nothing like this. Yeah. So, Trump's cabinet giving him the Kim Jong-un treatment, it's clearly going to his head because here he is musing about himself as a dictator for the third time in the last few weeks.
So the line is that I'm a dictator, but I stopped crime. So a lot of people say, you know, if that's the case, I'd rather have a dictator. If he stops crime, he can be whatever he wants. Not that I don't have the right to do anything I want to do. I'm the president of the United States. If I think our country's in danger, and it is in danger in these cities.
The statements and the sentiment are, of course, not new by now. You know, I mean, I think it was very early on in the administration. He tweeted that, you know, he who saves his country cannot violate any law, the Napoleon quote, or at least the quote that's attributed to Napoleon. He seems to be saying it a lot more frequently these days. The White House, I think, told, I think it was Politico, oh, he's just doing it to knock down all those silly dictator accusations. He's just taking it on because it's so ridiculous. Is that what's happening?
He seems to really enjoy the dictator part of the job. Like, it is his favorite part. He's not really digging into the substance of policy issues. And he really likes sending the military places, having parades in his favor, being feted by his cabinet member for 3.5 hours. And, like, he will say, I'm not really a dictator. But there's no enthusiasm in that part. All the enthusiasm is in the, look at all the things I can do. I'm a dictator. I think he's, like, we know this is what he values in leadership. These are the people around the world he admires. It's not the Democrats. It's the dictators. So it shouldn't be surprising.
What's really dangerous here and what and we're going to talk about the occupied DC, maybe soon to be occupied Chicago, and sort of the politics around crime. But what drives me nuts about the whole debate around crime or immigration is what he's saying there, which is, I can do whatever I want if the country's in danger, right? Same with the tweet, he who saves his country violates no law. What he is setting up there is, whatever happens, whatever I decide to do, all I have to say is that there's an emergency in the country, that we are in danger, whether in danger from immigrants, from protesters, from Democrats. I don't know, we didn't even play this clip, I forgot about it. Stephen Miller was on Fox earlier this week. He literally said, the Democratic Party isn't a party, it is a domestic extremist group. That's what Stephen Miller said. They are setting it up so that they can do whatever they'd like with the military, with their secret police force, to anyone in the country, and say it is because there's an emergency, because the country's at risk.
I mean, this is textbook fascism. This is how fascist regimes happen. They fake a threat, they seize power to protect people from that fake threat, and they never give it back.
And it's just like, and we're going to look back on it and be like, well, at the time, he just said it was about fighting crime, and people want crime to go down, or he said it was about immigration, and people were really upset about the border. How could it have been about this? Some of those protesters turned violent. Of course we wanted to bring in the troops. So those comments were part of a longer rant about sending troops to Chicago, why it's so offensive to him that J.B. Pritzker won't ask him to do it before he does it anyway, which it seems like he will, after he posted about Chicago on Thursday and said, quote, the people are desperate for me to, all caps, stop the crime, something that Democrats aren't capable of doing, all caps, stay tuned, exclamation, 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 President DJT. Again, the Gavin tweets are the ones that are silly, right? Those are the ones that are. The administration has also asked for Naval Station Great Lakes, which is just north of the city in Chicago, to offer logistical support for what Christine Noem is calling an ICE strike team that is on its way to Chicago. Meanwhile, in occupied D.C., armed troops are still patrolling the streets. The federal government has seized control of Union Station. So that's cool. Mayor Muriel Bowser got criticism from the D.C. Council after saying she, quote, greatly appreciates the surge of officers and believes that crime is going down, though she did also say that the masked ICE agents are unhelpful and that the National Guard presence is unnecessary. The New York Times reports that Cleveland Mayor Justin Bibb hosted a call with other big city mayors to talk strategy around Trump's deployment, where he urged a, quote, serious on safety, serious on cost messaging strategy. The big undercurrent in the Times story is Democrats worrying about appearing soft on crime because of their opposition to the president's military occupations of major American cities.
It's going to kill me.
Right? Like, you say the sentence and you're like, oh, maybe we don't want to be soft on crime. Polls are mixed on this. So there was a new AP poll that shows that 55% of Americans support the use of the military and guard in assisting local police. Trump was not attached to this. It was not asked as a, do you support what's happening right now? But in that same poll, 55% oppose the federal government taking control of local police. On the other hand, voters in a new Quinnipiac poll this week oppose Trump's D.C. deployment by 56-41. And a new Reuters poll has just 36% of Americans approving of Trump's takeover, while 46% oppose. Polls also show that D.C. residents fucking hate it, which is also evident by the fact that the Justice Department has now failed to get multiple indictments from multiple grand juries in D.C. for charges involving alleged assaults on federal officers, including Sandwich Guy.
Oh, Sandwich Guy, we got off.
They didn't get Sandwich Guy. He's going to get charged with a misdemeanor because they couldn't even get a fucking grand jury to indict the guy.
Really bring a lie to the idea you can get a grand jury to indict a ham sandwich.
Ugh, Dan.
It just came to you. I mean, should we take a moment right now, speaking of great sandwich jokes, to point out what's soon to be available in the Crooked Store?
Thanks, Dan.
I mean, I was shocked and disappointed by this, but you tell us.
Well, Lovett had the idea of having a T-shirt with a sandwich on it, and underneath the sandwich, it says Hero, which is a name for a sandwich.
It was pointed out by Saul, our producer.
Yeah, Saul, it took Saul a minute to get it.
But he got there.
He did get it. They also wanted us to wear it during this.
It was sitting on the back of my chair.
And I was like, no, I'm like, we're going to end up on Fox anyway. I don't need to be wearing that shirt while we do.
Yeah, that's right. Wait till we get to the Democratic section. Then yeah, we'll be on Fox.
That's where we really shine. I do think there's something to be said for all jokes about the sandwich guy aside. It is extremely rare for grand juries not to indict.
Oh, yeah. I have the stat that's going around Twitter, which I don't know why this is dated to 2010, but in 2010, there were 163,000 federal prosecutions, and they failed to get an indictment in 11 of them.
So
that's a 99.993% success rate.
Because I'm not a lawyer, didn't go to law school, not like Levitt and took the LSATs and got a high score, I looked this up the other day. Not about this, but way back when it seemed like all of our colleagues might be getting indicted for the Russiagate hoax. And I was like, why do grand juries turn back indictments like so many times? And I didn't realize, like, in many cases, there's no judge there. There's no defense attorney. It's just the prosecutor. Yeah. The prosecutor they run the evidence, or they present the evidence, and they also instruct the grand jury on what the law is. So they have enormous power here with really no sort of dissenting, opposing argument.
Yeah, the point of it is to prove to a jury that you have probable cause for the charge.
Right, yeah, and the standard is obviously much, much lower. So the fact that they couldn't get that, it does tell you that people in D.C. might be getting, I know, D.C., extremely Democratic city, but it might tell you people are getting pretty radicalized against the military takeover.
Isn't he on video throwing the sandwich?
Yeah. I think the reason is he's throwing the sandwich.
It's not a felony.
Of course you can't be throwing fucking sandwiches at police officers or federal officials, but misdemeanor, which is what he's getting charged with, and not a felony, which is the way the law's supposed to work. Back to crime. What's your sense of where public opinion is on this? We have talked about, I don't know if you and I have had the conversation about the D.C. takeover. We've had it privately, obviously, a million times, but I don't think we've had it on mic. Please
maybe
correct
we
us.
We literally might have done it last week.
You can all correct us. Yes. Yeah, I don't know. But what do you think?
I mean, I think it's worth just acknowledging that the politics of crime are complicated. So in 2024, two-thirds of Americans told Gallup that crime was up over the previous year. Crime was down. And this is not a new phenomenon, TikTok broke our brains sort of situation. In every year since the year 2000, a majority of Americans have thought crime has gone up. Hmm. Most years, crime went down. And it's because there's a couple of reasons for this. One is the news. This is a worse problem now in social media. But for the beginning, as long as there's been television, the news has led with crime. So if there is one murder in your community, it will be on the news for like 6 weeks at a time. Right. So it never gives you an accurate... You know, the news covers the bumps, not the road.
Yeah.
The second is people, and the polling also shows that people are think of crime as a serious problem, even when statistically they have no reason to be very worried about crime. But people's fears are not rational. A conversation you and I have about flying all the time, where it's like
I thought you were going to say, flying too. And also a conversation we had about inflation, right?
Yeah.
And this is a different subject, but like, you can't be like, oh, the economy is doing great. And someone's like, well, actually, it's fucking expensive
to
buy groceries.
Well, I'm saying, when someone's scared of something, you can't, like, telling them that they're more likely to die from a piano falling on their head than whatever they're worried about. Like, this is an ongoing frustration of Barack Obama's, because remember, everyone was worried that ISIS was going to come to their mall and attack them. And it's like, the odds of that are so small. And you have all these other ways in which you could die. Like, you're at risk for every time you get a car, much more at risk when you get a car, et cetera. So people's fears are irrational. And Republicans have a strength on crime, right? Trump, he had a 1-point advantage on crime in a poll that happened in 2024. But every other issue, he's underwater. This is an issue where he is not underwater, although there has only been limited polling on crime up until very recently. So you hear that in Denver. People are like, avoid his trap. Don't fall in his trap. He wants you to talk about crime instead of tariffs. Well, the president invades a U.S. city, the United States Capitol, with armed military. It's kind of hard not to talk about, so you should probably find the best way to talk about it. My view of it is that you can't make it about crime. Mm. But you can't say, like, I have just told you the facts that crime has actually gone down, and it's gone down a lot in D.C. It's one of the largest drops in violent crime in history year over year. But telling people that is not basically your best play here, because then it does sound like you are minimizing crime. I think you should make this be about the fact that this is a stunt. It's a giant waste of taxpayer resources, and it's happening against the wishes of the local officials and most importantly, the local police.
Yeah. It's tough because if someone thinks that the presence of troops and extra cops and everything else is about, okay, well, there's more cops on the beat, and so that seems good because most people think more cops means it's going to be safer, especially if I saw. And it's not just
and Bill Clinton ran on that promise.
Right. And it's also not just about people. Okay, well, you could say, like, how many people have actually experienced a crime? It's not just about experiencing a crime, though it is about that. But it's just about, like, public disorder, right? Like, if you're on a subway, if you're on a street corner, you see someone screaming and yelling at somebody, like, you're like, okay, this is kind of scary, right? And so it's about more than that. But if you think that, like, that ICE is about deporting the worst of the worst, and you think that extra cops is about bringing down crime, then you're going to say, well, this all seems fine to me. But if you're walking around the city and suddenly they're tasing delivery drivers and people in masks and hauling them off and throwing them in a van, and you're seeing all these troops armed just in your city day after, maybe a couple days, it's no big deal. Maybe a couple weeks, it's no big deal, but like day after day after day. And then you're going to be like, I don't know. Is this really about crime? Because this seems pretty. And to your point about the stunt, I think everyone who saw the National Guard troops just picking up trash in D.C. because there was nothing really else for them to do, they probably don't think, oh, this is scary, but they probably think, yeah, this is maybe a little bit of a waste here. Yeah.
That's what I think the right argument here. So the hard part is, like, yes, if you live in the city, you experience the disorder to the extent it exists. You know, if you live in a city and you, like, have to get someone at Walgreens or Duane Reade or CVS to let you get deodorant every single time because they're so worried about shoplifters, like, that contributes to how people feel about public safety. But most people don't live in cities, or a lot of people don't live in cities. And so they're not seeing the National Guard. They're also not experiencing the crime. Now, people who don't live in cities are actually oftentimes more afraid of crime.
Right.
Live in the cities.
Because they watch the local news, which is about the city that they live near.
I mean, there was a time in which people were so afraid of crime that they wouldn't put sports arenas in cities.
Right.
They would put them in the suburbs because they thought people from the suburbs wouldn't go in the cities because they were so afraid. And so I just think that in the argument that Democrats should ignore this is not a real argument because it's not possible to ignore it. You cannot be someone who is a member of the opposition party who has taken an oath to the Constitution and then say, I am just going to stay silent on the military occupation of one American city, possibly spreading to others because it doesn't pull well. So you would just have to figure out how to talk about it. And I do think, like, the way to do it is to sort of ally the crime trap and try to treat it as a stunt that's a waste of taxpayer resources that runs against the advice. It's not what people in the city or the people who run the city or the people who protect the city actually want.
Also, people don't want crime, but I bet if you ask them, do you want a situation where there are these masked agents setting up vehicle checkpoints, asking for people's papers, who look like they might be undocumented immigrants, who have brown skin, or in some cases just anyone, and they're stopping the cars and they're saying, where's your papers? I don't think people like that. Like, I throw that in a poll because I don't think that's how people want to live in this country. So I do think it's like it's about framing it in a way. And by the way, that, you know, that was happening in Tennessee. It happened in D.C. On 14th Street. Like, I just don't think people want to live like that either.
And there's this is incredibly dangerous. There was a moment, you know, as you guys talked about on Tuesday, the National Guard is now carrying weapons in D.C. for no reason.
No reason.
That has been articulated. But at some point, something bad is going to happen. Something Kent State level is going to happen. Yeah. And that could be the sort of thing that fundamentally changes the fabric of this country, both in how the public reacts to it and how Trump uses it.
Pod Save America is brought to you by ZipRecruiter.
Sure is.
It can be overwhelming to have so many options. Like, when you're trying to figure out what TV show to watch, when you're at a restaurant that has a huge menu and you're like, do I get the chicken Madeira? Do I get the crusted chicken Romano? Do I get the sliders?
Got the sliders.
When you're on vacation and you want to see all the sights, right? You can't see all the sights, you know? You can't see all of the cathedrals. You got to pick one. Same applies if you're a business owner who's hiring. It can be overwhelming to have too many candidates to sort through, but you're in luck. ZipRecruiter now gives you the power to proactively find and connect with the best ones quickly. How? through their innovative resume database. And right now, you can try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/crooked. ZipRecruiter's resume database quickly identifies top candidates for your roles through advanced filtering. See a candidate you are really interested in? You can unlock their contact info instantly. 320,000 new resumes are added monthly, which means you can reach more potential hires and fill roles faster. No wonder ZipRecruiter is the number one rated hiring site based on G2. We've been using ZipRecruiter here at Cricut for years. They've helped us find a lot of great people.
That's how we found Tommy.
That's how we found Tommy. Mm-hmm. That's how we found Tommy. I don't know what we were. It was a very specific post. But there he was, walked in through the door. We heard the angels when the door opened. Like, there he is, the Tommy. That one we were looking for. Remember we were looking for a Tommy?
Yeah, that's we're like, we got two Johns. We can't get any more Johns.
Yeah, we need a Tommy. Yeah.
There he is. Thanks, ZipRecruiter.
Skip the candidate overload. Instead, streamline your hiring with ZipRecruiter. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address, ZipRecruiter.com/crooked, right now to try it for free. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/crooked. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
All right. Speaking of the Democratic Party trying to figure out what to do about our descent into fascism, boy, did they nail it at their at the annual summer meeting in Minneapolis this week. So this event had everything: land acknowledgments, competing Gaza resolutions, worries about fundraising, polling presentations that advise ditching the phrase tough on crime for serious about safety, even a proposal for a new fight song, which we will get to in a bit. No surprise that the coverage of the event, which was for some reason live-streamed, focused almost entirely on the party's internal conflicts, with a heavy dose of mockery. To be fair, the party did have some wins. Democrats flipped a state Senate seat in Iowa this week with a 20-point overperformance, and the DNC had invested in the organizing around that race, so they took some credit for that. But overall, the consensus seemed to be that the meeting wasn't exactly Democrats putting the party's best foot forward. Afterwards, Democratic operative Adam Jenelson told the Bulwark's Lauren Egan, quote, "It would probably be better for the party as a whole if the DNC just turned the lights off and padlocked the building for the next 2 years." What do you think?
I think the whole thing is maybe a microcosm of all of our problems, which is you have in Iowa this great win, right? Like we know we do well in special elections. We're actually, in 2025, we're doing about 5 to 6 points better in special elections than we were doing in 2017. So I think that, like, there is evidence that underneath the challenges we're having at the party establishment level, that people are doing the work and winning races. And that's very important.
Did you see that turnout was 55% of the 2022 midterms in that district? That's high for a special election
It's incredible.
In the summer of 2025.
So, like, that is the positive part here. It is the establishment of the party, which is embodied by the DNC, which is a collection of whatever it is, 400 some party chairs, party committee people, just like the absolute establishment of the establishment, that is still struggling to reckon with the moment we are in, right? Both, I mean, I will stipulate, I've been in politics a long time. The DNC has been a shit show almost for the entire time of my career. And particularly when we're in opposition.
It exists to be a punching bag and a shit show.
Like when you have the White House, the DNC is a political arm of the White House, and it usually is neither, you don't ever really hear from it. It raises money, it organizes, it does what the White House wants. When you're in opposition, it becomes the vessel for everyone's anger about the party, even though it has so little power and so little influence.
Yeah.
Like everyone thinks the DNC like makes messaging decisions, picks candidates, can fix presidential elections, all these things, and it's really... it's basically, in a presidential election, it's a bank account for the nominee with some organizing on the side.
Here's my big criticism of the whole event. Why did they live stream it? Why did they just, if you're going to have a meeting and you're going to have polling presentations and you're going to do the whole thing and just talk about shit, like, just don't, I mean, you can have, I guess you have press there. I don't know. Like, they can just have a fucking meeting.
I mean, it's open press. Like,
I get that some parts are open press.
I'm sure they've been live streaming it for 100 years. Like, since live streaming was available.
Well, then, if you're going to live stream it, do we need to start with the land acknowledgement? Is that something that have we not learned our lesson? First of all, and it's not like the land acknowledgement, like, do we think the land acknowledgements do anything? Do we give back the land like we probably should? Do we go do, maybe people should go do something to help Indigenous Americans in the country instead of just acknowledging the fact that hundreds of years ago, something horrific happened on that land. I don't know.
It's
what are we doing?
Like it's very hard to think about what we should do as a party and reverse engineer it from what is going to make it Fox and Friends. Like, I don't want us to do that. But there does need to be a little more savvy about the whole picture that is painted, right?
Just a touch.
Just a little touch more savvy. Like what is the story you're telling with this? Like, there is a world in which you could use this to, like, we have a bunch of exciting candidates, like really exciting candidates. We've had, to the credit of the Senate and House, we've recruited a bunch of great candidates to run. The Sherrod Browns, Roy Coopers, a bunch of really interesting people running for House, veterans, former, like, fired federal government scientists and people working in the VA and all this. You could highlight those people. We're winning races instead of doing that. Instead, the DNC, which has no real say in a lot of these issues, I know we're going to get to the Gaza resolution in a second, is putting itself in the middle of it. And I think one challenge here is, I don't know what the answer is, but there was Ken Martin won the DNC race. Mm-hmm. He was the most insider of insider candidates, right? He was the chair of the Association of Democratic Party Chairs. He'd been a party chair for a long time. He'd been a very successful party chair, to his credit. But he won the race because he had relationships with all the other party chairs, which is a huge part of the voting bloc. But it was a continuation of what the DNC had been. I know he's trying to make changes, but like after 2024, you probably needed someone who was going to come in a little bit like Howard Dean did when he won the DNC, who was going to like knock it over and start from the beginning. And so we're kind of we're not making any real wholesale changes. We're just kind of making cosmetic changes around the edge, and it's not working. Yeah. But like publicly, like, I mean, that's the thing.
And it's the public aspect that's the tough part, right? Because I think that Ken Martin would say and did say to me when I interviewed him, it's like, you know, he's been investing in organizing, doing all this stuff. And, you know, that's why they took credit for the Iowa thing and good for them. And he is an organizer at heart. There is a larger problem with the DNC and just the party in general Ken Martin is not going to be able to fix.
Yes, the DNC is an embodiment of the party's larger problems.
Yes, and doesn't seem like they really dug into those that much, at least made a lot of progress, projecting an image of the party that has learned anything from the last defeat.
Right. I think that's the bigger thing is, like, you can't expect the DNC to solve the problem. You can't expect them at the August 2025 annual summer meeting, I guess it is, to have like figured everything else out. But there was probably a way to be a little more deliberate in the public presentation of what the party was doing.
For example, I'm just thinking of this now, like, so that candidate who just won in Iowa, invite that person to come speak there. It's some of the recruits that we have that are exciting candidates in some of these swing districts. Invite them to come.
I bet they wouldn't come. That's the problem. Yes. But I mean, this is
the
problem.
Yeah, I know. You're right. I know.
So we're going to get to this, the other convention idea going on, but one of the challenges is if you're Roy Cooper or Sherrod Brown,
you don't want to be.
You would never go there.
You don't have that. You don't have the taint of the DNC being on you. Yeah, that makes sense. Well, while this was going on, Gavin Newsom did a big live interview with Politico where he did not mince words. I think we have some tape.
This guy doesn't believe in free, fair elections. He tried to wreck this country. Were you there January 6th? Tried to light democracy on fire. He dialed for 11, almost 12,000 votes. Now he's doing it in plain sight. And people said, oh, just Trump being Trump. You think he's joking about 2028? You think when he brings foreign leaders to the Oval Office and he goes to the White House store, have you seen this? Anyone? Is it just me? And he shows them the 2028 hats? He's not being serious? Wake up. You or lose your country.
I mean, that's one way to do it.
Yeah.
Right? Now, I caught a couple lines from Ken Martin's speech. And, you know, he was doing the, like, we got to fight fire with fire thing. And he was trying to, you know, be tough like Gavin. But again, that's one person in a whole meeting that gets...
It's not that the people there don't want to fight.
No, it's not that. It's just it looks too...
We're hammering on them. I'm not trying to defend them in any way, shape, or form. But there was no way this was going to go well.
Right.
There was just absolutely no way because...
There's ways it could have gone better.
It could have gone better. But it's just Democrats are mad at Democrats right now. So it's one that, like, if you have a great meeting and the Republicans are going to shit on it no matter what the meeting is, but if Democrats are mad at the party, as they have every right to be right now, then it's you just create this. You're pleasing no one with anything you do.
I do think and wish very much that more Democrats would find their own inner Gavin Newsom. And what I mean by that is not just do exactly what he's doing and then try to do the tweets that his office is doing and then say the same things that he's like do find what's making you upset and what's really bothering you and where you think the country should go and like go say that more and be less I mean we've talked about this, but like be less cautious. And again, I'm not even saying that like, you know, Gavin Newsom's going to be our best nominee, right? Like, I'm just saying in this moment, in the summer of 2025, there should be more Democrats sounding like that.
I think I wrote about this in my newsletter, The Message Box, this week, but there is a fundamental divide in the Democratic Party. And we have divides on every issue. Like, as I wrote, we're divided over Ezra Klein's book writings. Okay. Like,
we're about to talk about Gaza. So, yeah.
Like, so we're divided on everything. But I really do believe that the big fundamental divide in the party, and Alyssa Slotkin has talked about this a lot, which is people who think Trump is an existential threat to democracy, which Gavin Newsom does. And a lot of people who think that Trump is very, very bad, but survivable. That our goal here is to just make it to 2026 and then make it to 2028. And that if you are in the Gavin Newsom camp, you need to think outside the box. You have to be willing to embrace high-risk strategies that push the envelopes, are willing to run over norms or previously held positions. And if you're in the latter camp, where I think Chuck Schumer is, I think Gretchen Whitmer is, you just think very differently. And I think more people should be in the Gavin Newsom camp. I am in the Gavin Newsom camp, but I really found that to be the way to understand how people think about things. Because the DNC meeting is, even if people use the public rhetoric that sounds a version of what Gavin Newsom says, the way that they keep doing things the same way suggests that they are in the this is bad but survivable camp.
Yes. And I'll give you an example of why this is not ideologically necessarily ideological. Or even old versus young, or even are you going to go hard at Trump or not? Bernie Sanders. Bernie Sanders has been acting now for several years like he believes that we're in an existential emergency. He hits Donald Trump whenever he can, but he also has his Bernie thing, right? He believes that the oligarchy is the problem, and he's very economically populist. He's been consistent about this for his whole career. But he's out there pulling huge crowds, probably the most popular politician in the party. And he's acting like this is an existential threat, right? Completely different. Could not be more different than Gavin Newsom in a whole bunch of different ways.
It is interesting. Like, I could do a whole podcast on this, but like Bernie Sanders, I am interpreting this, but believes that Donald Trump is the symptom of the larger problem he's been talking about for years, which is the oligarchy, an unfair economy, a rigged economy. And Newsom, who I think doesn't necessarily disagree with Bernie on some of the things about the economy, thinks Trump is the problem.
And like Alyssa Slotkin, right? Who you just mentioned, you know, former CIA.
Yeah.
She's in that camp too. So it's like, it's all kinds of people. But, the people I really worry about, I'm not going to name names here, but.
No, please do. No.
Well, because I can't even think all of them, but the people who I think believe we're in an existential crisis, but do not sound like it, you know, like some people have thought about it and are like, I think this is survivable and I'm just going to act that way. There's some people who they can't get themselves there, you know, they can't get emotional and I don't want emotional, but like they don't have the passion. They don't have the fire in the belly and they're just sort of, you know, very just analytically talking about it. I'm like, what are you doing?
I think it's a poverty of imagination.
Yes.
I think it is very, very hard. I think this is, you guys talked about why everyone's shrugging about what's going on. I think it's very, very hard to imagine what is happening to America actually happening here. Because it was impossible to imagine just a year ago, the idea that you would have a politicized law enforcement agencies that would be prosecuting people's political opponents, that you would have military marching in the streets. Like that seemed the idea that democracy could crumble. Like we believed it could last forever. We believe that for a very long time now. And certainly believe that the only thing that could stop it would be a foreign power and not something internal. And so I think for a lot of politicians, particularly ones who've been around a long time, there are exceptions like Bernie, it just cannot fathom this is actually happening and are unable to think about it in real ways, and then embrace the solutions that are proportionate to the threat.
Yeah, that's well said. And there's a lot of trying, like almost like trying on a costume.
Well, that's the fake bullshit, right?
It's the fake bullshit. You get a lot, I've said this before, like a lot more of them are swearing. Like they think if they swear a little bit, they drop a few fucks, then suddenly everyone's gonna be, oh, they're tough now.
I'm for the swearing. I think it's fine.
I'm only for the swearing if you swear normally, if this is how you talk. You know, unfortunately, this is how we, I wish I swore less on this, but like, this is how we talk, you know? And if that's how you really talk, then like, go do it. But some of them drop it mid-conversation. You're just like, where'd that come from?
I've never met a politician who didn't swear a lot, I would say. Never once in my life.
Yeah. So again,
maybe Joe Lieberman would be the exception.
I like the Gavin tweets, but like, do find your own thing.
Oh yeah, that's just
don't
embarrassing.
Do your Gavin tweets.
The people doing the other Democrats doing the Gavin tweets is embarrassing. You need your own shtick.
Just yeah, figure out your own shtick. That's all.
This podcast is sponsored by Squarespace. Squarespace is the all-in-one website platform designed to elevate your online presence and drive your success. Squarespace provides all the tools you need to promote and get paid for your services on one platform. Create a professional website to showcase your offerings and attract clients. Whether you offer consultations, events, or other experiences, Squarespace can help you grow your business. Squarespace offers a complete library of professionally designed and award-winning website templates with options for every use and category. No matter where you start, your website is flexible with intuitive drag and drop editing, beautiful styling options, unrivaled visual design effects, on-brand AI content, as many fingers as you need, they will put on those pictures. Whatever you need, a picture of somebody eating a steak or talking to a lawyer, you can get 10 fingers, 12 fingers, 20 fingers, whatever number of fingers you want, they got them. Beautiful, beautiful. And you don't need any experience. You can say, you know what? I love this picture of a person getting a mani-pedi.
But I'd like a third arm.
Not enough fingers. Not enough arms. Not enough fingers. Not enough fingers. And this dog is doing a terrible job of operating this forklift, which is made of cake. Every dream needs a domain. But also, if you're a lawyer, you could use it. Squarespace domains come with advanced privacy and security tools included to ensure your domain remains online and protected. Security tools. They got Christy Noem on this thing? Stupid. Squarespace provides everything you need to bring more of your dream to life. Whether that means building a website or adding a professional email service, don't wait to claim your name. Invest in your dream domain today. Head to squarespace.com for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/crooked to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/crooked.
So as I mentioned, the DNC also, we got off topic. DNC also debated two competing resolutions about how to respond to the war in Gaza, with one resolution calling for a complete arms embargo and the other, supported by Ken Martin, calling for a more moderate middle course. After a lot of debate, Martin ended up pulling his resolution and kicking the issue down to a task force of stakeholders. Okay. Again, don't want to beat up on the meeting here, but maybe this is a chance to talk about in general. You think the party can get its shit together on this before 2026?
It is the question of whether the party will be able to catch up to public opinion, not just in the within the Democratic base, but within the entire country around military offensive military aid to Israel during what's happening in Gaza.
Yeah.
That's the question. Also, side note, we don't need committees doing resolutions. Like what is the DNC resolution going to do?
I know. I don't...
It's like we can have a larger discussion about the party platform in the presidential election year. Like, there's some real questions about how useful that is, but that at least has some. You're putting on paper what theoretically the nominee believes in, so then you can hold them accountable to that point. But the mid-year, like, just the opinion of the Democratic Party is this. I don't know that. Like, I think there's a real effort that should be done to try to move the other half of the Democratic caucus to be where we think they should be on this vote. I don't think a DNC resolution is meaningful in that task.
And I will say, because I'm not going to make the moral case for this again, and especially because the people in the other side of the party who are still singing the same tune about Israel, you know, they'll say, oh, I get that this is emotional, but, you know, this is we gotta seem like we're on the side of Israel. That's where the American people are. That's not where the American people are. Look at the polls. If you think that that's where they are, those are old polls. And it's not just Democrats. First of all, that Quinnipiac poll, like, if you ask if they believe that we should end weapon sales to Israel, it was like 70%. I mean, it was overwhelming. But the overall number, including independents, and of course, you know, Republicans are still for it, but like the overall number, I think, was like, I don't know, it was like 56, 57 for ending weapon sales? Like, it's a majority opinion now.
I mean, you ask people if they approve of how Israel is conducting the war in Gaza, the numbers are even more devastating.
If you ask people who they sympathize with more, the Israelis or the Palestinians, it's now the Palestinians, which is also a huge shift from October 7th. I mean, and the reason I'm just bringing up the polling is not because that's how I think we should talk about it, but to those people in the Democratic Party who think this is a polling issue, it is not.
I think that there is a lot of parallels in terms of the politics. I'm only talking about the politics.
With Iraq?
With Iraq.
I know. I've been thinking the same thing.
There are people who know what the right thing to do is, but because of an outdated view of politics, are afraid to do it. And those people, especially if they're running for president, are eventually going to get to where everyone else is, but you're going to be late.
And you're going to be,
you're going to seem inauthentic. You're going to seem fake when you
because it is. You know? I mean, I'm sure there's some people going to be like, wow, of course you could have this conversion where you're like, wow, I fucked up and this is horrible. And Netanyahu clearly is never going to end this war and just wants to fucking bulldoze Gaza and doesn't give a shit what happens to people and whatever else. Yeah, you could come around to that. But a lot of people are just going to, they're going to look exactly like what it is, which is, oh, this is where the base is and I want to win. And so I'm going to now pretend this whole time that I was actually against.
There were moments to do, like obviously incredibly great credit to the people who were very critical when the Democrats were very critical when Biden was president. Like that is the right thing to do, but not easy to do it against your president, particularly in an election year. But with Trump as president and with the way things have changed, particularly with the famine in Gaza, the moment was months ago. And so like that is an actual change of facts on the ground that could cause you to change your opinion. But the more you wait, the more you're going to look like you're playing politics here.
Yeah. See, Jake Sullivan?
Yeah.
Biden's former national security advisor was talking to our pal Tim Miller on the Bulwark podcast and said that he's advised Democrats that they should oppose weapon sales. Like, that's Jake.
Yeah.
Who's in the Biden administration.
So it was the person in charge of implementing the Hug BB strategy.
So, like, what are you doing? If you're, you know, I just don't understand. So Axios reported on Wednesday that senior Democratic officials now want to host a mini convention ahead of the 2026 midterms. I'm now laughing at this because of the conversation we just had, where they can showcase candidates and emerging party leaders. Not to be outdone, the next morning, Trump posted that the Republican Party might host a convention of their own before the midterms. That, to me, was the only evidence that maybe this is a good idea. What do you think?
In theory, I understand the idea is that Democrats need opportunities to get attention. And having another convention, particularly if you did a big one, right? Like you're not filling the where do we go to the convention? Where was
Chicago?
That? Chicago. You're not filling the United Center.
It's okay. We all want to forget it.
I know we went to Milwaukee for a week. I know we went to Chicago for a week.
We're still waiting for Taylor Swift to come out on stage.
Just Leon Panetta instead.
Yeah.
Like so, the idea of doing a big event and having like good speakers, and you'd have to get like Kamala Harris would speak there, and maybe you get Barack Obama. Like you would need to draw real attention and get real people to do it. Like that is intriguing.
Joe Biden.
Your face is so good. That was so worth it. That's an option. I mean, it's an option. I actually would say that I'm sure that the people who would attend the Democratic convention would be very excited to hear from Joe Biden. You and I were in the audience for his speech in Chicago, apparently, which is where that was.
Just keep going.
But it does, I'm not sure we could execute it in the right way. It would be my concern. Like, I understand the idea in theory, but if you do it and then you just have another giant fight over a Gaza resolution, or the other thing you would see is the most prominent Senate candidates don't show up because they don't want to be there for it. So it's like you're doing this convention and Sherrod Brown doesn't come and Roy Cooper doesn't come and Graham Platner, if he's the nominee in Maine, doesn't come. And maybe John Ossoff is busy that week. Then it's embarrassing for the party.
Yeah, because then you're getting, it's like a speech from Chuck Schumer, a speech from Hakeem Jeffries. And then now we're looking for more people to fill this speech roles. And it's like, quick, where's Kerry Washington? And where's all the it's just like, I don't, it gives me the.
Yeah, I understand.
At first, I was like, you know what? We need to get attention. Yeah. My first instinct was like, oh yeah, a good idea to get attention. And then having watched the summer meeting and talk about this, I'm like, I think the execution is quite difficult.
The Republicans are definitely going to do this.
Yeah.
Because Trump will make another.
And then we're going to, Trump probably did it to goad us into doing it.
No, he wants to do it because he wants another party celebrating him. But
well, and
I think it's to his advantage.
Yeah, because I think his big issue for the midterms is the people who turned out for him don't turn out for Republican candidates. And so if he can attach himself to the midterms in people's minds, then he can tell everyone, hey, get out for me. Don't forget about these candidates.
It's a double-edged sword for sure. But he's probably going to get all the downsides of the anti-Trump fervor anyway. So a moment where he could keep like high-profile moment where he could communicate to his voters that this is, the people who didn't turn out for this is probably to his advantage. So if he does it, then we'll probably have to do it.
Or one place we could just do it is CrookedCon.
Oh, Is there a place
did you know? Did you know we're having a?
I'm aware.
Have you heard?
I'm aware.
November 6th and 7th.
Is there a website you can go to?
Yeah, it's crookedcon.com.
I got it.
I get it.
Was that an intentional tongue twister?
Yeah, I don't know.
Was that a prank from the marketing team on you?
Yes, I think most things are. Yeah. All right, Dan, as promised, just to close out the meeting section, it did include a fight song, which no DNC meeting is complete without. Semaphore's Dave Weigel reported that someone from Act Blue not only shared the song, but recommended that the party adopt it, and in multiple sessions, put the lyrics up on a presentation so the attendees could sing along.
Did they incessantly text it to everyone?
I apologize for doing this, but I do need you to read the lyrics.
I can't read the lyrics. I do this from off the dome. I don't have a laptop, so you'll have to do it.
Fuck. DEMS, we rise, stronger together, blue skies. Lift your voice. We're bold and true. Onward, Democrats. We shine blue.
Woo! The thing that is so funny about this, other than the fact that someone thought we needed a fight song.
Yes. And that it has a blue sky reference.
Yes.
A little on the nose.
It's the use of the term stronger together, which is the failure of every Democratic messaging process ever. No matter how bad it is, no matter how many Yahoos are involved, it ends up with some version of stronger together.
Everything is perfect about it. The only thing I am disappointed in is that we can't hear it. Like, is there a melody it goes to? That's what I want to know. I asked Dave Weigel on Twitter, but he does not respond.
If there are any...
If anyone has... The person from Act Blue, I don't know who it was, but whoever can give us a melody to this, I want to be singing it, you know, because I want to practice for this midterm convention in Crooked Con and whatever else.
You heard it here first, that if someone can find the melody for this, Jon Favreau will sing it solo. Wait, can you play it on the piano?
Learn to play it on the piano. It will become our new theme song to Pod Save America.
That's ridiculous. I think you should perform it at
Crooked Con?
Crooked Con or the wedding, birthday, celebration, whatever, of whichever Vote Save America volunteer knocks the most doors.
That's a good one.
Jon Favreau will come to your gathering.
This is now up
on VoteSaveAmerica.com. By the time this episode comes out on Friday morning, it's a failure of the political team.
Come up with the melody, everyone. All right, last thing before we go, we have to talk about one more piece of news. Taylor Swift's engagement to Travis Kelce.
What? This is the first time hearing of this.
I was in a meeting. I was off my phone for an hour. I come back outside. There's like 40 texts. Most of them from my wife.
I was going to say.
In all of the text chains I'm on with her and other Taylor Swift fans, it was wild.
I was doing when this came out?
What?
I was talking to Caroline Reston on Polar Coaster, and no one interrupted the show to tell her.
About Hunting Wives.
We were talking about Hunting Wives at
which
the time.
Which I hate watched and now can't wait for the second season.
Yes. Well, if you want to hear
That's
my,
how I hate
if you want to hear my take on Hunting Wives, subscribe, become a friend of the pod. Crooked.com/friends.
There you go. Anyway. Most of the world offered their congratulations. A nice little moment here in our broader descent into fascism. Even Donald Trump was gracious about it. But then Charlie Kirk, you know Charlie Kirk.
Familiar vaguely with him.
He recently called us a group of low-T complainers and whiners.
Oh, I thought that he was just referring to the Tuesday pod.
It's true. He had this advice for the happy couple.
Maybe one of the reasons why Taylor Swift has been so... just kind of annoyingly liberal over the last couple of years is that she's not yet married and she doesn't have children. Taylor Swift might go from a cat lady to a J.D. Vance supporter. And I think we should celebrate that. It's a great chance for Taylor Swift now to get married and have a ton of children. You can certainly afford it, Taylor. This is something that I hope will make Taylor Swift more conservative. Engage in reality more and get outside of the abstract clouds. Reject feminism. Submit to your husband, Taylor. You're not in charge.
What a lucky woman who got to submit to that penis with a hairpiece. She is one lucky lady.
Yeah.
She taught, you know, there's clips of Charlie Kirk's wife talking about how I love submitting to Charlie.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
You are deep in the internet.
I mean, that's why I get straight fives on Terminally Online that's all right. The time. So that's interesting, huh? It seems like he was purposely trolling. Is that what that is?
No, I think that's his legitimate, sincere belief.
Yeah, he does think he does think like birth control makes women crazy. He said that before. I mean, he's a real piece of work.
Yeah, he's not great.
He's a real piece of work.
Just the kind of person you want being a close advisor to the President of the United States.
So it's like fucking Taylor Swift is like worth more money than a million Charlie Kirks put together, and probably more people go to one of her shows than have ever listened to Charlie Kirk.
Yeah, I'd say that's
it's
possible.
It's just like, what? Okay, man. Good luck. Good luck. Again, lucky lady married to Charlie Kirk. All right. New Crooked merch just dropped. Check out crooked.com/store to see the latest. Who knows? Who knows? Maybe you'll find the Hero t-shirt.
And they released the Epstein Files doormat.
There may be an Epstein Files doormat in there as well. Again, got to go to the design meetings more.
more once.
That's where love it is right now, probably. Also, reminder that you can now stream ad-free video with a paid subscription to Crooked. Enjoy Pod Save America, Pod Save the World, Love It or Leave It, and Offline, and exclusive shows like Inside 2025 and Polar Coaster with Mr. Dan Pfeiffer. No interruptions, just the content you actually came for. Ad-free video is available now on Supercast, Substack, and YouTube. Visit crooked.com/friends to learn more. That's our show for today. We'll be back on Tuesday with a special episode for Labor Day, which will be marking our 1,000th episode.
Wow.
I know. That's a little behind the scenes. That's why Dan's here, guys. He's
it's,
here.
It's for, it
we
had for
to
the
bring
spot.
Him down for the 1,000th episode.
It's very, very, very
it's a big
important
deal.
Moment. Yeah.
Big deal. That's what we're celebrating, I guess. We're going to be answering lots of great listener questions for the occasion, so check it out. And everyone, have a great holiday weekend. If you want to listen to Pod Save America ad-free and get access to exclusive podcasts, go to crooked.com/friends to subscribe on Supercast, Substack, YouTube, or Apple Podcasts. Also, please consider leaving us a review. That helps boost this episode and everything we do here at Crooked. Pod Save America is a Crooked Media production. Our producers are David Toledo, Emma Illich Frank, and Saul Rubin. Our associate producer is Farah Safari. Austin Fisher is our senior producer. Reed Cherlin is our executive editor. Adrian Hill is our head of news and politics. The show is mixed and edited by Andrew Chadwick. Jordan Cantor is our sound engineer, with audio support from Kyle Seglin and Charlotte Landis. Matt DeGroat is our head of production. Naomi Sengel is our executive assistant. Thanks to our digital team, Elijah Cohn, Haley Jones, Ben Hefcoat, Mia Kelman, Kirill Pelaviv, David Tolles, and Ryan Young. Our production staff is proudly unionized with the Writers Guild of America East.
Save on quality sofas, sectionals, top brand mattresses, and more during Haverty's President's Day sale. Find the style of furniture you've been looking for at Haverty's, online or in Columbus at Polaris.
Moro Casino. America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.